Have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I recently saw a health video he made and I was surprised. He's in his 80s and still seems to have his energy and health. He says he's even stronger, has more stamina, and plenty of energy left over for his grandkids since making one simple health change that helps his digestion and nutrition. He says he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife made the same change and she's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, and she has energy all day. Many of us do not include the fruits, vegetables, and other herbs that increase health and energy in our own diets. Chuck Norris made a special video that explains how he incorporated these things with one simple product. You can watch it by going to mymorningkick.com/Harris. It may change your approach to your own health. Once again, that's mymorningkick.com/Harris. We are live now on the Conversations That Matter podcast. Wow, I was not expecting to talk about what I'm going to start talking about this morning, but it fits in with some of the other things that I had planned. So we're going to start off with the breaking news right now, which is what's essentially happened in the development of the Nashville shooting. We have an article here. This is from Louder with Crowder. And I saw on Rumble when he put this out there, if you want to see some analysis and Steven Crowder reading this, but this is the Nashville shooter. The name is often Audrey Hale, but Aiden Hale, I believe, is the birth name. But transgender shooter identified as trans. And this is hot off the press. The title of the article is, "We have obtained exclusive access to the Nashville Covenant Shooters Manifesto." As many of you remember, Aiden Hale shot students and teachers at at Covenant School in Nashville, which is actually right across from the street from a place I spoke in, I think, 2021. And the ERLC's actually president, Brett Leatherwood, his I don't know if it's son or daughter, but one of his kids goes to this school, at least one of them. So there are some connections to the Southern Baptists, and I'm going to talk about that a little bit as we get into this and just remind everyone about what the Southern Baptists did in reaction to this and whether or not you think that was the right call, given what we know now. But here are some screenshots of the actual manifesto. So you have first, it says Death Day is the heading of this particular article. And then it goes through some of the thoughts of the shooter before they committed the action. And I'm noticing that there's some ads here. Hopefully I can take care of those. I hate these. It's Crowder's website, and I understand he's got to monetize, but I don't like it when the ads are like that. Anyway, so here's the manifesto itself, a screenshot of it, at least the first page. And it says, "This is the day. The day has finally come." This is on the 27th of March earlier this year. "I can't believe it's here. Don't know how I was able to get this far, but here I am. I'm a little nervous, but excited too. Been excited for the past 2 weeks. There were several times I could have been caught, especially in the summer of 2021. So it clues you into the fact that this was more than just 2 weeks this was being planned. Apparently, this had been years in the making. None of that matters now. I'm almost an hour and 7 minutes away." So an hour and 7 minutes away is another thing that should clue you into something. This school was specifically targeted. It wasn't just a random school that fit a certain profile. It was specifically targeted because he had to travel from a distance to get there. "Can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm ready. I hope my victims aren't. My only fear is if anything goes wrong, I'll do my best to prevent." I think it says anything. I'm not sure what word that is, of the sort, but preventing anything from going wrong. "God, let my wrath take over my anxiety. It might be 10 minutes tops. It might be 3 to 7. It's going to go so It's going to go quick. I hope I have a high death count. Ready to die. It's underlined. Ha ha. Signed, Aiden. Which is interesting that... So Audrey was the name that this particular male was going by, but he signs it with his, I assume that's the birth name, Aiden. And then there is a schedule here of the day's events, which shows you how organized this whole thing was. All the way from getting up, getting dressed, eating breakfast, and then getting everything ready, even going to the range, the gun range, before, and using a knife that had a car glass breaker on the end of it, testing that out on some of, I guess, his dad's old cars, and then leading up to what Aiden says is time to die. So this is the second part. This is so that was the schedule, and then I guess this is page three. This is all handwritten, by the way, in a notebook, and these are screenshots that were, from my understanding, obtained by Steven Crowder's show, but they were sent to someone. Someone had these images sent to them, I'm assuming from Aiden. And so here's another one, and I think that's also. Now, I think Steven Crowder was saying this was Audrey was the name up here, but it looks like Aiden to me, and I can't tell. I mean, that looks like a Y at the end, so maybe that is Audrey. But either way, this belonged to the shooter, and it says, kill those kids, underlined, 3 exclamation points. And then it says, those crackers. Going to, and I will note, I think everyone knows, but I'm allowed to say that without censorship. I couldn't say things that are equivalent about other. I couldn't read. I'll put it that way. I couldn't read a manifesto hypothetically that's similar to this if it was targeting other ethnic groups, because this video would be taken down. But that's the double standard, and we'll talk a little bit about that. That's not where I want to focus most of my time. Conservatives are kind of notorious for pointing out double standards, which doesn't necessarily move the needle, but I think sometimes it's worth at least mentioning. Jesus did it with the Pharisees at times. So those crackers. Going to private fancy schools. So schools is plural here. This means that Aiden wanted to target a specific school, but the anger is, there's an umbrella of anger that encompasses more than just that one school. With those fancy khakis and sports backpacks, with their daddy's Mustangs and convertibles, F you little, and I'll substitute a word here, poops, but obviously not using those words. I'm trying to keep this. I don't even know if I should attempt it. You can't do family friendly with this. So if you have kids, I would just say, just be prepared, because I'm not sure exactly what's coming next in the episode, depending on what people comment. And please do comment in the live chat if you have thoughts on this or anything you want me to comment on. I wish to shoot you, weak, and then a name for a donkey there, and then a name for a male part, with your mop yellow hair. So, you know, this is really getting into anti-white, anti-Aryan type looking people. Is this, I mean, you look at Aiden and you think Aiden's a very, it's associated at least with like white suburban kids. And Aiden looks very white and the kind of person that would fit this demographic that he's going after. But with all the anti-white rhetoric in the last few years, it's not a shock that someone would feel this way. I mean, we've seen this kind of anger even from people in Christian circles, and I pointed it out many times. In fact, the rioting was understandable. You remember that? Who's that? Walter Strickland, I think, said that. You know, he understood why people were rioting, and it's they weren't being heard, and so implying as Christians, we all need to kind of understand this, and not that it's necessarily right, but give it a sympathetic treatment. And I mean, you've had so many instances of this. I mean, it's hard to even, I have so many like examples flooding to my mind, from, you know, Matt Chandler's Anglo 8 to Tim Keller saying, if you're white, you have an extra $1 million head start on life, to what happened at Southern Seminary with various professors there demeaning figures from white history like Thomas Jefferson. And I mean, there's just so much of this in the Christian world, let alone the secular world. And I don't need to go back over that. Those who listen to the show, you're very aware of all of this. But just think about that narrative and that hatred that was supposed to. I mean, this stuff was not. Someone's actually commenting and saying the natural shooter was a biological female born Audrey. So I guess I got that reversed. Transition to male and change name to Aiden. So, OK, that may be true. It's been a while since I covered it, and I thought I remembered it being the other way around, but I will go with what I'm being sent right now. So it's Aiden, I guess, is not the birth name. It's Audrey is the birth name. Sorry for that confusion there. And so actually that makes more sense to me now, why she would use that name in particular. So anyway, this narrative, though, the interesting thing to me about this is this is mostly an anti-white, pro-critical race theory type narrative kind of screed. And she says a bunch of little, and then uses a word typically used to demean homosexuals, with your white privileges, F you, and then that word again to demean homosexuals. Now, I don't know why she would use that word term, given her own identity, but clearly there's a problem here with hating people that come from her world. I mean, people that look like her, people with whom she has a connection, and developing such a disdain for them. You can even see, I mean, she's putting pictures of a target and a gun and shooting that gun at the target on this particular journal or note paper that she had. So that's the breaking news. That's the situation. And I'm sure so much more by the time even some of you listen to this, so much more will probably come out. One of the listeners says, I wonder if critical race theory was used as a curriculum in the school. I wouldn't doubt it if there was some connection there. And Brian Babes says she was white hating on her own. Yeah. And that's, I mean, we saw that in 2020. A lot of the people who had the most, from where I was sitting at Southeastern, I remember it was the whitest people in the whitest communities going to the whitest churches seemed to have the biggest problems with white people. It was amazing. So why was this censored until now? I don't know the answer to that question, but Cripple Creek Carl asked that question, and it's a good question. But I do know one thing. And thank you. Other people were jumping in to correct me on it was a biological female. So that was not intentional, just so everyone knows on my part. Obviously, I want to be correct with their true biology. And I got that switched up in my head. And I'm not sure why I did, to be honest, because I certainly knew in March, if you go back to those episodes, that Audrey was a biological female. But anyway, neither here nor there. One of the things I wanted to focus on here is what the ERLC, Brent Leatherwood, who's has a connection to the school, what they have done, what they did do with this at the time. And if you're a Southern Baptist, this does have some relevance for you. This is something to start thinking through to some extent. The New York Times reported the shooting at Covenant School, Brent Leatherwood, a Covenant School parent, who has been present in court over the last few weeks, said Thursday's developments made it an extraordinary day by any definition. From the outset of this case, Mr. Leatherwood said in a statement, and this is the key part, "We have told our attorneys to leave no stone unturned in our pursuit of the ultimate objective we have, which is to prevent any of these writings," meaning what you just heard me talk about, "or any material that might inspire similar destructive events from ever seeing the light of day." He added, "No one, either in the legal community or outside of it, should doubt our resolve." This is resources that if you're a Southern Baptist and you're giving to the Southern Baptist Convention, some of your money is going to the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission. And some of that money went to these attorneys who were working overtime, apparently, or at least working very hard, according to Brent Leatherwood, to suppress what you just heard me read. Now, I find that a curious thing because, I mean, maybe someone in the chat can correct me if I'm wrong here, but has that ever been something that the RLC has put any resources toward in other similar circumstances where there's a shooting? Have they tried to, at least even without attorneys, publicly take a stand against releasing those manifestos? I don't think so. I kind of doubt it. If someone has an example, I'd be curious to hear it. But this was something that was very personal to Mr. Leatherwood. Yet there was something else he did at the time. And here is a copy of it. This is a letter, and it's got the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention heading on it. It says Office of the President. Dear Lieutenant Governor, Speaker, and every member of the legislature, this is Tennessee. Now, I was told, this is going back now a few years, but I was told during Russell Moore's time that the ERLC did not get involved in state political matters. They were more national matters. And so that's the reason they didn't back the heartbeat bill, that kind of thing. Well, clearly, they have no problem backing red flag laws and putting their efforts into that, you know, on the state level in Tennessee, because that's exactly what this letter, and I'm not going to read it for you, we talked about it at the time, goes over. This is Brent Leatherwood, the president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission for the SBC, encouraging people to vote for a red flag law. Now, there's nothing in here about transgenderism or the connections between transgenderism and mental health, or just the violent tendencies. And I'm talking about the violence that transgender people tend to do to themselves, whether that's the just off the charts high suicide rate, or it's mutilating their bodies, or, you know, things like that. You would think that that would be concerning if you're going down this road of saying we should limit people who have firearms. That should be probably one of the main factors, especially after a shooting like this. But there's nothing like that. And so this is where Southern Baptist resources were going in the days after this particular shooting. It took Steven Crowder, it took a conservative political commentator and comedian to actually release this. And he made the point several times in his podcast that in the release of this, he thinks it was very possible that other larger media companies, even conservative media companies, had the resources and ability to do the same thing, but were too cowardly to do so. Now, I don't have any primary sources on that, but I would just say that that makes sense to me. At least that rings true with what I've seen, even in the Christian world, that it took him, who's bold enough to put it out there, to actually put it out there. And I think it is something that probably needs to be put out, at least if the standing tradition is these things are released, which has been that. I can't remember a high profile shooting that had one of these in which it wasn't released. I mean, I remember reading the Dylann Roof manifesto. I remember there was one in Buffalo, New York, that was a racially motivated shooting. And I remember that was released. And I mean, most of these are. There was one at a Walmart in Texas, 2 years ago? That was a climate change kind of manifesto. I mean, these things get released almost immediately, generally speaking. And the purpose, at least I thought, was to warn demographics of copycats, or at least to let them know that there are evil people who want to target them. So in the case of, let's say, the Charleston church, where you have someone who is specifically targeting Black people, it's important to warn Black people that, hey, there's at least one person out there who used violence against you because he doesn't want you around. And if there are copycats, if there maybe there are others who are involved with him, we don't know all the information, but I think it's important to just be careful, be on notice if you're in that demographic. I thought that was the intention. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's all just political. In this case, though, you have a Christian school, and you have it's white people. It's white people who attend Christian schools in the suburbs, fairly affluent people, at least affluent enough to let their kids drive their Mustangs. And those are the kinds of people that should be put on notice. But notice the media did not carry any kind of narrative. I mean, normally the media doesn't even need a manifesto for that, right? They automatically jump to the assumption it must be motivated by some kind of a right-leaning motivation or a racially motivated against minorities kind of thing. They didn't do any of that with this. it couldn't have been linked to transgenderism. It couldn't have been linked to anti-Christian hatred or anything like that. And here we see that the suspicions apparently were somewhat vindicated that many conservatives had of this. So that's the concern I have with Southern Baptists giving money to the ERLC and then Brent Leatherwood using that money to hire attorneys to suppress something like this. There's clearly an agenda there that is political, and it's mostly, it lines up with the left's political agenda, which is if it's a shooting that they can use somehow to move the needle against their the base of voters that opposes them, then they will release it. They will smear them. They will do whatever they can. But if not, if they can't use it in any way, it's suppress, it's cover up, it's make it go away, make it quiet, and then blame the guns. And that's exactly what Brent Leatherwood did. It was blame the guns. And so this is why, I mean, I don't want to give, people know what I think. I don't want to give anyone specific advice because everyone's in a different situation. But for me, this is one of the reasons that I just couldn't in good conscience ever give, at least to a general fund in the SBC where some of that money could go to the ERLC. I just couldn't do it. That's a voluntary thing. You don't have to do that. Just because you were born into an SBC church and you your church has always been SBC doesn't mean it needs to continue being SBC. And it doesn't, even if it's SBC, you should at least look into ways that you can give, if you have to stay in, you know, give whatever it is, your $18 or your $20 to stay in. Make sure none of that money is going to the ERLC. That would be my advice. Now, I think most of the entities have corruption issues in the SBC, if not all. So, but this is just egregious, in my opinion. So, Meg Houston said, it's definitely not always white kids who attend private schools. That's very true. But in the manifesto, it's white people who are singled out very explicitly. So it's not just Christian school attenders. It is white kids who go to Christian schools. All right. So, and Pastor Michael Grant says the biblical doctrine of separation will require a person separate from the SBC at this point. Well, yeah, I mean, if it requires you to partner with evil, then I would say absolutely. And there are people who debate that and say, well, we can still be in and not be in partnership with evil. That's a very hard line to walk, and increasingly a harder line to walk if you're in the denomination. So that's what I wanted to say about the SBC. Of course, in this episode, though, we are talking about transgenderism and the normalization of that. And there are many examples that I'm even thinking of episodes I've done in the past where we've talked about Acts 29 networks. They had a pastor who was, I guess affirming would be a fine label to use in Australia. They had a pastor who was affirming or at least normalizing transgenderism. And there was a recent, I think it was in Massachusetts, I played it a few weeks ago, a pastor up there in the Acts 29 network had also at least made, I don't know if you want to call what he said affirming, but he was trying to talk about reaching out and making churches essentially safe places where they're comfortable. And it was, you know, all motivated by this trying to evangelize by not being too critical initially, right? And just softening that approach. And so we've seen this kind of thing for years, really, in many circles. We've seen this from Gospel Coalition articles. We've seen this. What was the one? I think it was maybe it was TGC Australia again, where, you know, Jesus had a body dysphoria or kind of some kind of a dysphoria, and that was somehow linked to transgenderism or something like that. There it was weird, but there's a number of those things, those stretches that people try to make to accommodate. And they're accommodating lifestyles of sin, whether they know they're doing it or not. This is, you know, Revoice, certainly, but the Living Outs church. I don't know. I'm trying to remember what they called it, but it was a audit of some kind for churches to make sure that their church was inclusive of LGBTQ or people who believe that they are in one of those categories. Tim Keller, though, supported it. So this has been going on for a while. And so we're not going to focus on all of that, but I want to give you a few examples of things that just let me know that things are going to the next level, that there's a penetration of this ideology into formerly evangelical circles that's going much deeper. And that's going to continue, I think, for some time. So let's start with this one. This is an article from Enemies Within the Church written by Kyle Witt. Kyle Witt, by the way, former North American Mission Board for the Southern Baptist Convention church planner who whistle blew on what NAM was doing. And man of character. And he wrote this. The title is Max Lucado, who, of course, very big in evangelical circles, joins a conference with a transgender Christian speaker. And I'll just read some of this for you. Why is Max Lucado speaking at the 2024 Exiles in Babylon conference? It's the question we would love an answer to, though it seems the answer may not be a good one. But what is the conference, and is it truly a problem? This is even more problematic in the wake of Andy Stanley's Unconditional Conference, which was rightfully drawn more scrutiny to church leaders flirting with accepting homosexuality in some form or another. So it makes it more concerning that Max would be joining the stage with a transgender Christian, something that goes a step beyond what Andy Stanley did. Who would have thought Max Lucado would be going beyond Andy Stanley and in the wrong direction? But here we are. The Exiles in Babylon Conference is an annual Christian conference hosted by Preston Sprinkle in Boise. The primary topics it covers are LGBT and racial reconciliation, with this year additionally covering the church and politics and women, power and abuse. Funny how those things always seem to go together, right? We will briefly describe the issues here, but we prepared mini profiles on a speaker for each topic to allow you more details as to why this conference is so concerning. Those profiles are linked when each person is mentioned. So there's more information, essentially, if you want to delve deeper as you read the article. But you can go to EWTCnews.com, EWTCnews.com, if you want to see more of these links. So let's see. I want to skip past some of this. Okay, so there's a speaker, Kat LaPrairie, and I guess for this conference, the advertisement said that she would be talking about LGBT people and the church. Kat is a biological female, uses they, them, or she, her pronouns, identifies as transgender because of her disconnect between her body and her eternal self. Now, I'm almost afraid at this point to say biologically what she is, but apparently it's not a she. Oh, it is a she. Okay. See, that's why I'm afraid. I just got it wrong with the Audrey Hale situation. She is not a biological male. All right. So it's another she. Yes. Talking about transgender individuals is confusing when it comes to being clear about who they are biologically, but she is not the only concerning speaker addressing that topic. The only, the one that we find particularly concerning is Art. And I think I'm pronouncing this right. Art Pereira. A celibate gay man who has sought to satisfy his desire for marriage and family by inventing a chosen brother relationship where he and his straight friend have formed a household together. They've committed to maintaining that even after the friends gets married. This may sound strange, but Art's own descriptions, which can be found in his mini profile, are even stranger. This is just a taste to show what the conference's stances what their position on homosexuality is. Okay, so I'm not going to get some of this is analysis. They have some other woke speakers, apparently. Chris Butler, Tiffany Bloom. Chris Butler is a Democrat, not simply by voting, but he ran for Congress as a Democrat. Okay, so I mean, this is a woke conference. You have Chris has written a book promoting the ideas of the Progressives and campaign. Tiffany Bloom agrees with him, yet she takes it further by adding systemic oppression of women to the sins of America. So she's got a feminist side to her, and she's part of what she calls the resisterhood cohort class. She clarifies that it's not simply feminism, but women's liberation she believes in. Okay, so this is just, this is a woke fest. That's what this is. And guess who's speaking there along these with these others? Max Lucado. So, you know, very disappointing to me. At least he's scheduled to speak at this conference, which happens in 2024. This don't miss this. This is another step down the road to depravity. Max Lucado wouldn't have done this, I don't think, 2 years ago. 3 years ago, he was talking about I think it's my still most viewed video on YouTube. Go figure. I didn't put a lot of work into it. It was just like one article about Max Lucado and I read it and gave some analysis, but he was talking about his own white privilege and confessing his own sins of racism because he didn't, he wasn't compassionate enough and that kind of thing. And that was a surprise to people at the time. And there were people mad at me at the time because they thought that, well, you're getting him wrong, John. He didn't really mean that. And I'm like, I'm just quoting him. Now, look at where he's headed. Look at who he's associating with. Look at who he's willing to talk with in the theme of a conference that's exceptionally woke. So I got a question. I'm not sure this caught my eye. John, your mute Christmas concert review was epic. Would you consider doing another? I'm assuming that's TGC. Sure. Yes. And I know, yeah, people keep reminding me that the shooter was female. Yes, I got it. Sorry. Sorry. I think people are coming onto the live stream and they're seeing the earlier parts where I was saying biological male in error. And I have corrected that, though. All right. So you have Max Lucado doing this. You also have, this was recently at the Dove Awards, you have Derek Webb. Derek Webb has had, I think, like 10, if I'm not mistaken, top 10 or maybe number one hits on Christian radio. I mean, there's someone who has some significant, had some significant power, or at least influence in the Christian music industry. And these are pictures of him dressing like a woman, cross-dressing. I mean, look, he's dressed more as a traditional woman than most women are dressed now. I mean, that's the irony of this. I mean, you have these male cross-dressers who are putting on more feminine apparel than what women are wearing. I mean, this is what you might see your grandma wearing. And this is where, you know, he went with someone who is considers themselves to be transgender to the Dove Awards. Now, this doesn't mean the Dove Awards was endorsing this, but he found it acceptable in his mind. At least he thought that he could get away with going and not feeling ashamed of it. And I don't know what kind of response he got, but I'm assuming he was allowed to go and he participated in at least attending. And this was, I mean, this was something that this is probably the first time that's ever happened. If it's not the first time, it's the first time of someone who's high profile. So, I'm not sure. Someone's got to talk to me about this Christian music thing. I'm not sure what concert you're referring to in the chat group here. So I'll respond at the end, but I want to get to a few more things. So that was Derek Webb. And then you have this. This is Zach Lambert, who is a pastor. And Zach Lambert had this to say, and this is from 1 year ago, okay? This sermon from 1 year ago. But I think James White, I haven't listened to James White's analysis. I'm sure it was good. But James White recently played this particular sermon and reviewed it. And so even though it's a sermon from a year ago, it's become, there was some on social media going back and forth about it, but there's only one clip that I wanted to play for you about this. So I'm going to play that for you and then we'll talk about it.
Which gender is or should be influenced by someone's sex at birth is debated. And the degree to which gender should be influenced by God's biological design is also debated. But what we do know is that the call for all Christians, regardless of sex or gender, is Christ-likeness, defined by the fruit of the Spirit. It is Christ-likeness, defined by the fruit of the Spirit. Dallas Theological Seminary professor and gender studies expert Dr. Sandra Glahn said it like this on our summer mixtape back in 2020. What God is interested in is fruit of the Spirit. For some, it's going to be the fruit of the Spirit in a female body. For others, it's going to be in a male body. And for others, it's going to be in an intersex body. But it's going to be the fruit of the Spirit no matter what your body is. This is very important. The call to Christ likeness is never gendered in Scripture, right? So there.
All right. Well, yeah, the call to Christ is never gendered in Scripture. Zach Lambert. Now, why did I want to play that clip for you? We've gone over the argument that he employs here. We've refuted it. He goes on after this to talk about how God does not have specific rules for holiness for men and women. It's just their general rules. And this is a strategy to redirect Christian focus away from, even asking questions about whether transgenderism is acceptable or wrong, but instead to try to say, you just need to focus on what God talks about. God's concerned about holiness, whether someone's transgender or not, doesn't matter. And the assumption is they can be holy and live apart from God's design for men and women, which is just kind of bonkers. But he cites someone here. This is what this caught my attention. He cites a professor, Sandra Glahn, from Dallas Theological Seminary. And Sandra Glahn is a professor of media arts and worship at DTS, and just talks about the different things that she teaches. But she also talks about art, gender, sexual intimacy in marriage, and first century backgrounds as they relate to gender. So she's got a bioethics, sexuality, and biblical women. So she's got this background where she's involved in discussions about gender. And this is where Zach Lambert is getting inspiration. So notice this. It's not that Dallas Theological Seminary is ignoring this. This is a seminary that cranks out a lot of pastors. It's a big seminary. They're not just ignoring this issue, right? Which is what a lot of evangelical organizations do. They ignore it. You know, it's just not worth the risk to take that kind of a risk and take a stand for biblical morality on this topic, because you're going to get the people influenced by the world and worldly thinking coming after you, and they're powerful people. They're going the extra step as this formerly evangelical school employs professors, at least one, who is actually affirming to some extent or normalizing transgenderism. Zach Lambert's inspired by Sandra Glahn. That's what I wanted to point out. I mean, this is a level down. Don't miss this. This is a level down. This is new territory that we're covering, in a sense, because the frustration for a while was that evangelical organizations were being weak about this stuff, not that they were affirming it. And I warned, a number of us warned, years ago, that this would eventually lead to affirmation and finding theological ways in which to somehow make the regime's narrative acceptable to biblical Christians or Christians who claim to value the Bible. And this happens in communist countries. This happened in, I know a little more about it because I've read more about it, but there's a book now. It's written by someone who is very left. But there are some primary sources in it that are helpful, or at least quotes of primary sources, called Aryan Jesus. And it's about the Nazi experience with the German Christian movement. And this is basically what they did was, you know how we're going to make sure that we survive? We're going to convince our overlords, the people who have political power, that we're not a threat. And in fact, we support their narrative. The Confessing Church, by and large, I know that there are there's a lot of respect for the Confessing Church, and there are figures in the Confessing Church worthy of respect. But by and large, the Confessing Church was very weak, and they wanted to just leave us alone, stay out of our church business, and we'll leave you alone. Okay. The German Christian movement went the extra step of Lutherans and Catholics saying, we're going to advocate for the Nazi ideology. And not only that, we're going to show how scripture supports it somehow. And that you have the same dynamic going on here, obviously different issues at play, but it's, what do the powerful people want? The people who could cancel us, the people who could take away our tax exempt status, the people who could, hurt us in some way. We're going to try to accommodate them. And the way we accommodate them, since the pressure's building, is we are going to affirm the evil things that they affirm. And that's the road that we're going down. Now, I was really happy to see, I don't want this to be, people say, a black pill for everyone. So I did want to point out that John Cooper, the frontman for Skillet, and by the way, I'm not a big hard rock guy. There's a few bands and a few songs that I've listened to that I guess you could, that are hard rock. But I have to say, I've listened to a number of songs on Skillet's new album. And there's one called Psycho in My Head. And I think it's about human depravity and so forth. But anyway, it's very catchy. And so I recommend checking that out and supporting John Cooper, to be honest, because John Cooper is taking a stand here. And it's a scary thing. I think he's bold enough. He can handle it. I mean, he was the guy that during the 2020 riots, and he was in, oh goodness, now I'm forgetting the name of the city that he lives in. Man, and there were some bad riots there too. It'll come to me in a moment. In Wisconsin, right near Chicago. Why can't I think of the name of it? Indian name. Kenosha. Thank you. I don't think, did someone put it in the chat? Kenosha. Somehow it came to me. So anyway, he was during those, that experience, I remember he talked about like being, you know, having his AR-15 ready, being in his house, hearing the riots. I mean, he's a tough guy, so I think he can take it. But look, this is a scary thing. And I'm not going to play the interview for you, but if you go to Rumble, there's like a 5-minute clip of him on OAN. Now it's a conservative news network. And he just rips in to what Derek Webb's doing and what Christians who want to normalize transgenderism are doing, how it's unbiblical, it's evil. And I just thank God for people like him who have influence, who are still using it in appropriate ways because they actually believe it. Now, since we're on the topic, I figured I would at least, people sent this to me, a number of people, and wanted me to comment on it. So I'd at least show you this. The Secret Life of Smith Station Mayor and Baptist Pastor F.L. Bubba Copeland as a Transgender Curvy Girl. It's a hobby I do to relieve stress, quote. This is from 1819 News, which is a conservative news organization. And they broke the story, and I think it was after they broke it that, unfortunately, this particular pastor committed suicide. And so it's a very, very sad story, but it's almost too hard for me to go through it. But you know, he called where he lived. It was, you know, where Mayberry 2023. This is a small town. This is, you know, people must not have known that, you know, this is what he was doing. I mean, there's a picture of him and Donald Trump. I mean, he's living in a very conservative world, but yet he had an alter ego life. He had his Britney character that he played at times, and on Instagram had, it looks like, I don't know if that's followers or what that is, but he had a following. I don't know how many people active in the trans groups online. There's just a bunch of stuff. I mean, 1819 News found everything. I mean, they found even, you know, where he's wearing clothes that his wife is seen photographed in other places. And this, of course, has led to he has taken his life. And I mean, I don't even know exactly what to say about this. Other people wanted me to comment, but I don't even know if I have words. It's just it's extremely sad to me. And coming from one of the most conservative towns in the country, or at least that he describes it as, a very conservative place, very traditional place. Pastor and the mayor. I mean, this is a small town. So obviously there's the narrative that the left takes on this kind of thing is that it's the stigma that comes with transgenderism that killed this particular individual. Bubba died because people were judging him. And they don't think about, well, maybe it's these kind, and I'm not saying he was even trans. I don't even know what you would call what he did. I mean, he was part of these transgender communities, so I guess that's fine. But this cross-dressing, this, maybe there's something deeply wrong that's going on here. Maybe there's a reason that suicide is so prevalent in this particular demographic. You know, maybe doing violence, mutilating yourself, and then committing suicide is a sign that you're not well. And so the left will place the blame on the community, that the community did this to him, and he had to kill himself because of he couldn't take the judgment. I mean, this is a man though who's a pastor and a mayor. I mean, in a community that's pretty red. So, you know, obviously there is going to be some stigma with that. And in fact, if the community knows, if they love him, they should make sure that he's no longer the pastor. They should make sure he's no longer the mayor. They should get him some help. And that's where the emphasis should be. We need to help this guy. And we need to also check ourselves. And how are we this deceived? How did we not see this, right? Those are the kind of questions I'm sure people are asking there. But he decided to end it. And so I don't know that this story fits in with the normalization of transgenderism. There are still places, especially red places, small towns, where this is, you can't be the pastor of the local Baptist church and have and be doing cross-dressing on the side. It's just not something that's accepted, and it shouldn't be. But the fact that, you know, this is even a temptation for someone who lives in what he calls Mayberry, that's the thing I suppose I want people to think about a little and ponder, is the media has put so many things in front of our eyes, pornographic images. Even if you're not looking at pornography, you're taking in advertisements. I mean, at the beginning of this video, they weren't like super bad, but there were some advertisements even on the news story I was trying to get rid of before I showed it to you. I mean, we're just so used to those things, and we're very overly sexualized, and it's not, we don't even have to leave our house. And these influences come in, and you can be in Mayberry without anything overt going on that would persuade you to go that direction. And you'll go that direction because there's other influences coming in. And I don't know, you know, what influences Bubba was looking at or listening to, but that would be my very strong suspicion. So a little bit of a wake-up call. So, yeah, someone says that's not transgender. That is cross-dressing or maybe transvestite. Well, I got it, but he was part of these transgender groups. So that's why I'm saying, you know, I don't know. I don't know what you would call it. That's why I don't know enough about his situation. Okay, so that is that. We've been going 45 minutes. I think we have time to go over some of the other stuff that I wanted to talk about. Oh, with last but not least on the transgender issue, I wanted to say thank God for Rosaria Butterfield. I wanted to let you know about this. Reformation 21 put out an article published by Rosaria Butterfield. This was October 16th, and I didn't cover it because, well, I had some tragedies in my own family and I just couldn't, but I did tell her that I wanted to get to this. And there's a picture of the town, or that's, yeah, is a school board meeting. I thought that was a town meeting, but anyway, no, it was a school board meeting. So here's the article. Let me just read for you some clips from this. The meeting opened with reverent silence and ended in plaintive wails and heaving sobs. No, this was not the funeral of a dignitary. This was the school board meeting in Durham, North Carolina, where residents shared opinions about a newly passed parental rights law. The new state law prohibits the county school system's current posture of concealing a child's transgender identity from parents. And tonight, the only place we heard the word perverted was from a school board member about Christians. Our journey to that night in Durham begins months earlier as Andrew learned firsthand that local votes addressing the foundation of reality could come up without much warning. So she goes through what essentially led her to making this decision to go make a speech at the school board meeting. And I just have to say that this is something that all the evangelical elites who have influence should be all hands on deck about. And the silence is deafening. And it is people like Rosaria, who is a mother and a pastor's wife. She's an author, but she sees herself and her life is primarily that of a mother and a pastor's wife. Not that a pastor's wife is a... I have parents. My dad's a pastor, so I know that pastor's wife is not a position. All right, it's not in the Bible. You're just the wife of a pastor. But she is a hospitable person. She complements the work that her husband does. That's how she sees herself. There's no reason that she has to go to a meeting like this and enter the fray, other than her conviction before God. The meeting opened with a moment of silence for those targeted by the state legislature's actions. I mean, how about that? You're going to go speak at the meeting and it opens. I mean, the bias is just oozing. People came with who spoke, I guess, who had pronouns. They wanted to say what their pronouns were. So Rosaria was finally called up and she shared her history as a retired tenured professor of English, women's studies and queer theory from Syracuse University. She was a lesbian activist for a decade. So she talked about all that. She has those credentials. But when she shared that she was no longer a lesbian, she was grateful she made no irreparable medical decisions that caused harm to her physical body. During her decade of lesbian confusion, a sense of tension and opposition rose from the board and the audience. Rosaria explained that children who experience either the medical condition of gender dysphoria or the ideological social contagion of transgenderism need guidance from their parents. the people who know them best, love them most, and can help them heal. She said the transgender movement's rejection of the state's biological categories of male and female renders it junk science. I mean, she literally, someone gasped when she said that. So she went after it, and she went after it the way you're supposed to go after it. No walking on eggshells, no trying to soft pedal it. She just said this was the truth. So because of time constraints, I'm not going to read the rest of this, but there's a great argument here for why this is an important battlefield. You know, we had at a school board meeting in the county, the town, I should say, where my church is, last year, one of the high schoolers from the church, from my church, went and spoke some truth to the school board about this topic, did something very similar. And it's just sad to me. His voice was the voice of opposition, right? And I think partially due to that, there were death threats against the church. And there was also another, the church also hosted a Moms for Liberty thing, or at least allowed Moms for Liberty to use their building. And I mean, that contributed to it as well. But it's like, you know, other churches in the area, I'm not trying to criticize church. Every church has their own situation, but this isn't something that other churches in the area are known for, right? They're taking these public stands. It's risky. It's risky. It's risky to write, you know, religious exemptions for the vaccine. It's risky to take a stand on biblical sexuality. It's risky to contradict the BLM narrative. It is that these things are all very risky things to do, especially in a blue area. And Durham is a blue area, by the way. I live near there, and I went to church there, and my wife worked there. And yes, it may be in North Carolina, but it is a blue area. Okay, so anyway, the rest of it is very encouraging. There's some scripture passages. And so Andrew Branch actually is the one who wrote this. I think I said Rosaria wrote it. Andrew Branch, wrote this. And Rosaria, so I guess she helped as well. So she must have, they worked together to write, to put this out there. Encouraging. John Cooper, Rosaria Butterfield, there are some voices out there, and they do have some influence, but it's just sad that we don't see more of this. And so I hope this will inspire others who might be listening to this to take firm stands on these particular issues. Now, I want to get to this stuff a little bit. I still have people telling me that she was born a girl, and that I was wrong to say yes. I know. People are that has to be the explanation. People are just joining the video, and they're starting from the beginning. So yeah, I thank you for letting me know that with Audrey. Okay, so I want to play for you a clip. I don't even know how I want to start this. I need to go through it quickly here. In about half an hour, I don't know if this is live or not. I'm going to be on the Rap Report, Andrew Rappaport's podcast. So if that's live, you can follow me over there. But anyway, I need to land the plane and do a few things before we get there. So let me just briefly go over this. Mike Johnson, the new Speaker of the House. This is from a lot of this information that I'm going to share with you has been around, but I just haven't been commenting on this stuff. Rolling Stone magazine, this is from Protestia, condemns House Speaker Mike Johnson for helping his son stay away from pornography. Now, if you read this article, basically what you find is that Mike Johnson has accountability software on his digital devices, as his son does, and they keep each other accountable, which, you know, it's a great thing. He's public about it. And I mean, this does a few things. I think it shows you he has humility, number one, because that's so important to say, you know what? I need this accountability. I need this kind of software. This helps me. That to me is a huge, that's an admission that, hey, I'm not perfect and I need help in this area. And it's also admission that I take it seriously, which, by the way, both of those things to me are just, I mean, I'm just so grateful that there's someone like that in the position they're in. I think that's God. Now, Mike Johnson has a number of detractors, of course, who Rolling Stone basically, this is what they said. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson admitted that he and his son monitored each other's porn intake. And of course, people like Keith Olbermann and other liberals said, you know, are saying that he has a problem with pornography and he's consuming that and that there's skeletons in his closets. They're basically saying he's a pervert. And this is what you know, these, the people who actively promote policies that make pornography more accessible, who use it in their own lives, who advocate for it, who have no shame in it, who think it's great. They're the quickest ones, of course, to go after any Christian who might admit that they have a struggle in this area or are actively working against this kind of temptation. And then they want to just smear them. They want to make them out to be horrible people. It's the height of hypocrisy, of course. But this is how this whole thing was twisted. And of course, if you speak out against homosexuality, the homosexual lobby, if you want to call them that, the activists will say you're just a repressed homosexual. That's why you're doing this. You know, they turn every motivation into some kind of a, you know, you're against pornography because you must be the worst kind of pervert. And looking at the worst kind of pornography, that's why you're against it, right? That's what they do. And it's all psychobabble that's meant to justify their own sin. But this is how the world treats someone like a Mike Johnson. Now, here's another clip. This is from, or a clip from Pete Buttigieg, if I can, however you say his name. He was a candidate for president, now Department of Transportation head. He is a, he was on the Stephen Colbert show, the show that Tim Keller said, I kid you not, Stephen Colbert, the Catholic who Tim Keller said did a great job representing Christians and the gospel and being a witness, you know, something like that. That's Stephen Colbert. So Pete Buttigieg was on that particular show. And this is what Pete Buttigieg had to say about Speaker Mike Johnson.
When we last talked, Mike Johnson was not Speaker of the House. Now Mike Johnson is Speaker of the House. And his record on LGBTQ issues is, what's the word, awful. So how do you work with a guy who argued that same-sex relations are, quote, the dark harbinger of chaos and sexual anarchy that could doom even the strongest republic?
Look, I'll work with anybody who can help us get good transportation available to the American people. But I don't know, maybe we'll just have them over, because our little house isn't that far from the Capitol. And if you could see what it's like when I come home from work and Chasten's bringing the kids home from daycare or vice versa, and one of us is getting the mac and cheese ready and the other one's microwaving those little freezer meatballs that are a great cheat code if you got toddlers and you got to feed them quickly, and they won't take their shoes off, and one of them needs a diaper change. Everything about that is chaos, but nothing about that is dark. That's the love of God is in that house.
Well, too bad for Mike Johnson and great for everybody else. Same-sex marriage is legal. It's constitutional. It's thriving.
Okay, yeah, it's thriving. Meaning a lot of people, I guess, are taking advantage of that particular, the laws that accompany the privileges of marriage. This is what we have to be prepared for as Christians. It's very emotionally manipulative. It's all emotional. Everything that you just heard, I mean, little house, even using adjatives that make it seem very quaint, that there can't be anything going on that's wrong in that. Okay, he's not talking about his sexual habits with his quote unquote husband. He's trying to focus on the things that you could put in a Hallmark card, the things that are heartwarming, you know, toddlers being messy and you know, eating their food and coming home from school and that kind of thing. And that's what's used to then say, that's what Mike Johnson must be opposing. And of course, Mike Johnson isn't opposing any of those things in particular. There's nothing that he's not saying that it's you know, the messiness that he's talking about or the evil that he's talking about isn't the messiness of kids trying to eat their food, which is the image you conjure up. What he's talking about is the complete overhaul of sexual ethics so that we don't actually have any rules anymore. So that, and I can't even say it really on the podcast. I feel weird saying it, but so men can harm themselves by sticking their private, I'm already like chickening out of saying, because I know that there's families who listen to this, but you know, get your kids out of the room. Men sticking their private parts in the back end of other men, where it's they're not meant to be doing damage, risking their own health, risking their emotionally. I don't even every homosexual I have known and been. I've even been friends with some have had deep emotional issues. Once you get close to it and you see what this life does to people, especially if you're a Christian, your compassion, the mechanism you have for compassion is activated, and you don't want people going that direction out of love, even if they hate you. And so I guess the question for Christians is that narrative is so overwhelming at this point that it even, that kind of thing crushes people like Mike Johnson, because he must be against apple pie at this point. I mean, he's against mama. He's against things that are quintessentially seen as Americana now, because now we're trying to link homosexual marriage with those things. How do you reverse that? Well, emotionally, I mean, you can try your best, but it's going to take some hard talk, some truth talk, and it's really going to take people trying to get around the emotions to go to the intellect. And that's a tough challenge in today's media-driven society. Of course, everything that you just heard can be applied to other sexual depravities, the things that we would consider today still to be very repulsive, bestiality, things like pedophilia. Those things, of course, or even polygamy. I mean, those things are all kind of condemned, but you could say the same exact things about those things that you just heard Pete Buttigieg say about homosexual marriage, quote unquote, marriages. Same things. So it's there is no way to prevent Pandora's box from being completely open to the widest degree when that's the kind of logic you use to propel the sexual revolution forward. So anyway, I figured I'd at least share that with you because that is part of the opposition to Mike Johnson. It makes me like Mike Johnson more, though. He's telling the truth. Hey, this is sexual anarchy. God's going to judge us. God's judged other nations. That's just standard Christian talk. Of course, here's the Tim Keller. This is why I told you that Tim Keller had. Let me get rid of this. Hold on. Tim Keller had said this a while ago. This was from 2022. So it was last year, about Stephen Colbert. It was a brilliant example Stephen Colbert put out there to be a Christian in a public square. He was a witness, but in a form the culture could handle. Yeah, I mean, this is the failure of the winsome kind of approach to Christianity. I mean, using Stephen Colbert as your, and if you look at the clip, this is from 2022. I mean, it's not even, he's not witnessing. It's not even a great clip. But this is the kind of person, I mean, it's people like this that have a little bit of a celebrity status and might be Catholic or Christian in some sense that evangelical elites tend to think, oh man, like that's our standard of success now. I wanted to show you, so that's the secular, way that people are handling this, but I want to show you something. This is Kristen Dumez, author of Jesus and John Wayne. And this is what she had to say about Mike Johnson.
That you did with Politico, you note that you're not using the term Christian nationalist here as a pejorative. You say it is merely a descriptive device, which leads me to the beliefs of Mike Johnson in particular. Does he qualify in your definition as a Christian nationalist?
Yeah, this is a term that scholars have been using for a very long time. And only very recently are people self-identifying as Christian nationalists. I don't know that Mike Johnson has self-identified as one, but he certainly fits all of the criteria that scholars have used to talk about Christian nationalism. So we tend to talk about people adhering to Christian nationalist commitments or being sympathetic to those. And yes, Mike Johnson, absolutely. His entire career, his legal career, his legislative career has really been dedicated to expanding the power of conservative Christianity in the United States.
All right, so that's all it takes. You want to conserve or propel, promote the authority or the power of Christian conservatives, so biblical values, that kind of thing. You're a Christian nationalist at that point. And the people on Twitter who are detractors of Christian nationalism and see it as this horrible threat and writing all kinds of screeds and blogs against it and making speeches, linking it with kinism and trying all manner of everything to distance themselves from it, will never escape this as long as they are a Christian and think that biblical values should be implemented on some level. They are going to be a Christian nationalist. That's all there is to it. This is how, like, notice how this works. The world is pushing against Mike Johnson because he's, you know, he's against pornography in his personal life, mind you. He is against, he was against homosexual marriage. They're pushing against that, or I should say the government recognizing homosexual wedding ceremonies. And what do the Christian elites do in this case when they have an opportunity to stand before the media and speak prophetically, right? You know, they should be backing up what Mike Johnson says. They should be saying, absolutely. I mean, where's the level of concern for things like pornography, for things like sexual anarchy in this country? Well, instead, what they do when they have the opportunity is they join the fray. They help carry the water for these evil worldly people. And they say things like, Mike Johnson is a Christian nationalist. And that's, you know, that's a horrible thing. It's on MSNBC that she's saying this. So they run in the same circles and they do the same thing. They're going, pushing in the same direction, pushing the needle in the same way that the world is pushing the needle. And I say the world, I'm talking about the lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, pro-social pride of life, and the philosophies and people who promote those things. That's what I'm talking about. They're carrying the water for them. These things ought not to be, but this is what you have in Big Eva, unfortunately. And unfortunately, too, when you have these detractors of Christian nationalism, we want to treat it like this stage, you know, 10 threat, red alert. They're helping people like Kristen Dumez make the case. I'm saying it as a fact. I'm not saying it as whether their critiques are right or wrong. That's just the practical outworking of it. If it's such a boogeyman, then that boogeyman's going to be wielded. So I think that was the last clip I wanted to share with you. I wanted to share this with you though about Mike Johnson real quick in our closing time here. I happened across to see this on Facebook. From a guy named Adam McManus. Pastor Chad Chauvin wrote, Mike Johnson was the first Sunday school teacher I had as a new Christian when he lived in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. This was the year 2000. He taught Sunday school from the Bible rather than using a workbook. On Halloween, he invited me and other college students to go door-to-door, passing out gospel tracts, sharing the gospel with our neighbors. It was also my first glimpse into what a truly godly household looked like, and he and his wife were expecting their first child. So he talks about this guy, and I mean, he's one of us. That's what it seems like. Now, that being said, I'm not going to play the clip because of time, but I did happen to see this. And this is the only thing I figured I have to be honest with you guys. Mike Johnson believes that white people have an easier path in life than black people because of the color of their skin, according to Patriot Takes. But if you watch this video, it's only a minute long. Mike Johnson basically says, I think they adopted a black son and that his black son's going to have a much harder time making, you know, his way through life. And I'm assuming this was in 2020. It's a PBS interview, and that we need transformative solutions to address this. So we need to, I mean, he is carrying the critical race theory water in this particular clip. Now I don't know whether he still feels that way or not, but that is a problem. And so I want to say I am positive about Mike Johnson, especially with a lot of the Christian things he said, but he was either deceived or believes even now, some aspects of CRT, at least the aspect that because of these systemic advantages that white people have, his white son is going to have a much better time of it. I mean, we just showed you three or four weeks ago, maybe a month ago, that the top companies in this country are overwhelmingly hiring minorities now in response to 2020. I mean, it's unbelievable what's happening to the white workforce as a result of that. So, I mean, his son who's black is going to have, obviously there are cultural differences. They're both going to have challenges, and challenges that aren't even related to the color of their skin, challenges related to all kinds of things, their Christianity, where they live, what field they decide to get into, what college they attend, what kind of hobbies they're interested in. I mean, there's a million things. But on that issue specifically, statistically, his son is going to have a much better time being hired by top companies in this country being Black, a much better time getting into Ivy League schools being a racial minority. I mean, that's just a fact. So anyway, someone said, ask the white people in South Africa if their life is easier today. Yeah, that's not so. In fact, there's a good thread my brother wrote on South Africa, the Boers of South Africa, for people who are on Twitter. It got shared by Lauren Southern. I think Tom Askell liked it. It was great. All right. Well, someone said, are you saying Max Lucado has gone woke? Oh, well, I'm saying Max Lucado has kind of been on the woke train, at least on some level, for a while. So I'm not saying he's gone woke. I'm saying he's been that way. At least he has some sympathies in that direction. All right. Last chance for questions. Anything that you guys might have, I would be curious to read questions, comments. I don't know if there's been further developments in this whole thing with Audrey Hale, but I have, just so people know, tomorrow, if I have the time, I have queued up the Robert E. Lee stuff because I didn't get to talk about that. So we'll see if we can talk about that. And also Southern Baptist stuff. I want to talk about this this amicus brief. And then also the reactions to a William Wolfe video that is getting a lot of attention, or was getting a lot of attention. He had to block all kinds of people. So we'll see how far we get. There's some other things too, but we'll see how far we get with that, Lord willing, tomorrow. Probably if I'm going to do it tomorrow, I mean, I don't know when it would be. It would be either, probably not morning, probably be towards the evening, but I will let people know. So final thoughts, final comments here. We've been going an hour and 10 minutes. So if anyone has anything, now is the time. It doesn't look like there's any questions. Someone asked if Pete Buttigieg had done anything for transportation. Does he even work? Yeah, I don't know the answer to that. I do not know the answer to that. Someone said Louisiana has a ban on pornography. It's limited, but it's an effort. That's great to hear. I mean, there are places where you still have old laws on the books that haven't been repealed. Someone says, was Audrey Hale known to be on cross-sex hormones? That I am not sure. Maybe someone can answer that. I am not sure about that. That would be an interesting question to have answered, though. Someone says that they think so. I mean, look, if you look at the picture, and maybe it's just the way that her hair is cut and everything. I mean, I'm looking at it thinking, okay, yeah, I mean, it's a girl, but for the first like 10 minutes of this episode, I was accidentally saying that she was a biological male, because sometimes it is that deceptive. And I thought maybe it was a male trying to look like a female. So yeah. How can we pray for your family? Thank you. Yeah. Oof. So many things. I think just the general thing is for peace, strength, and yeah, peace, strength, and wisdom would be the three things right now that we need. And yeah, it's been a hard time for my wife, especially right now. There's been a number of things, most notably her mother's passing, but there's been a number of things. And I just want to say, I should say this, thank you so much for those who did give to the funeral costs and send us letters and of encouragement and notes. And I really do appreciate that. It means a lot. Now, I did mean to do this earlier in the episode, but I'll close with it. If I can find it. So I wanted to plug something that is pretty interesting. If you go to, see if I can find the website. If I can't find the website, I'll have to do it in another podcast, but I really wanted to do it. Okay, yeah, it's tinybibles.com, tinybibles.com. And I'll show that to you so you can see what I'm looking at here. Sponsor for this podcast, which I, by the way, I'm very thankful to the sponsors who allow me to do this kind of material. So if you're someone who, reach out, if you're someone who has a product, I mean, and I want Christians to also know where they can go to get certain products, whether that's coffee or tea or craft supplies or whatever it is. So you're not going to Amazon, you're not going to companies that hate you, but I'll just mention this company. This is Tiny Bibles, tinybibles.com, tinybibles.com. And if you go there, you're going to see a picture of a very tiny Bible. Believe me, it is tiny. I have one was given to me that's, you need basically a magnifying glass unless you have really good eyesight. So the Tiny Bible in 1896 was produced by David Bryce of Glasgow, and it's a miniature Bible. You can see the picture here. I mean, it's like, there's the finger, there's the Bible. I mean, exceptionally small print. It's the smallest Bible ever printed in the world. In recent times, there's been nothing like it on the market. So now it's back on the market. You can actually buy copies of this now. And Kickstarter successfully raised $25,000 to be able to produce this. Now you can purchase it. And the intention behind it is, in the face of persecution, where, you know, digital things, you can lose them, and you know, larger Bibles can be confiscated, this tiny Bible can get into places where other Bibles can't. So it's a King James version. I think they're trying to work on some other versions as well. But you can check out tinybibles.com for updates on that. But this is something you can take with you. And so that's kind of the appeal. I think that it's kind of a novelty. In fact, I think it's a great prize to give away, you know, because Christians, I mean, we have how many Bibles we have, but do we have a tiny one, right? And so I think it's kind of a cool thing, even to just give away to you know, people in Sunday school or church, or just as a fun gift. I've used it several times in social settings to be like, hey, you want to read the Bible? And I'll give, you know, whip out the tiny Bible, and they're like, that's a Bible. So anyway, Martin Chamberlain's the individual who got this up and running. And if you want to know more, go to tinybibles.com. That's tinybibles.com, and get your tiny Bible. Makes a good Christmas present too for that Bible collector in your family. All right. Well, I thought I was done. Someone just mentioned to me that Mike Johnson fought against an abolitionist bill in Louisiana. Didn't know about that. Obviously not a perfect man, and maybe there are some issues there, but the things that he's getting flack for, I'm very positive about. I'll put it that way. So with that, thank you for your prayers. Thank you to everyone who chimed in. God bless you all. More coming. And in 15 minutes, I'll be on the Wrap Report, so you can pray for that interview. God bless.